Radio News.
This is Mid-Morning on Minnesota Public Radio News, and I'm Carrie Miller. It looked different. It sounded different. Did it make a difference?
We are part of the American family. We believe that in a country where every race and faith and point of view can be found, we are still bound together as one people.
President Obama delivered his State of the Union address to a mixed doubles crowd last night. Republicans sat with Democrats and vice versa, and he urged the country on to more introspection and greater civility. Today, a discussion about what the president said and didn't, what others said about what he said, and why he chose the language that he did to make his points. We ran the speech and the responses through Wordle. It's an online tool that assesses the emphasis on certain words, and we're going to talk about that a bit later. By the way, you can find the Wordle results on the Mid-Morning page. Look for the Wordle links at nprnews.org. We're also going to bring our social media editor, John Gordon, into the studio a bit later to talk about what turned up on Twitter and YouTube and the blogs and the web after the speech. But first to our guest, Jason Johnson is a professor of political science and communications at Hiram College. He's also political editor for The Source. And Jason, I saw your tweet this morning. I know you have been busy, so I'm glad you could be with us today. Thanks.
Glad to be here.
Trevor Perry Giles is with us. He's a professor in the communications department at the University of Maryland, and he's with us from College Park. And Trevor, thank you very much for being with us.
Good to be with you, Carrie.
And for our listeners, if you watched or listened, did this State of the Union and the response that followed deliver something different for you? Were there moments that particularly stood out? Did the president miss something, something that you wished he'd talked about? So if you tuned into NPR last night, you watched it on television, maybe you watched it on the web, I'd like to know whether there were moments that really stood out, whether the president missed something, should have talked about something that he didn't. 800-242-2828. If you're in the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000. If you're online this morning, nprnews.org. By the way, if you're online and you go to that Wordle link, I'd be curious to know what you think as you look at some of the words that were emphasized and some of the others that were not. So if you're streaming us today, check it out and then call in and let me know what you think or write in at nprnews.org. Phones 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. Jason, I thought I would play what the president said about this idea of sustaining the American dream, and then we can talk about the speech overall. Let's listen.
Mm-hmm. Sustaining the American dream has never been about standing pat. It has required each generation to sacrifice and struggle and meet the demands of a new age. And now it's our turn. We know what it takes to compete for the jobs and industries of our time. We need to out-innovate, out-educate, and out-build the rest of the world.
So did this speech sound different to you, Jason, or was he hitting a lot of the themes that you expected?
I think he was pretty much establishing what he's going to say in the 2012 election and putting the Republicans in a pretty tough position.
How so?
Because if your message is the future is great, the worst is over, and come with me to a grand new era, the Republican response has to be, well, things aren't really that good yet. And no one wants to hear that for 18 months. So I think on that level, he really hit the ball out of the park for the beginning of the 2012 campaign season.
I know that you were watching for signs of caution, because I think you've said you thought these previous State of the Unions were rather cautious. Did he look and feel and sound a little more freed than usual?
Yeah, he did. You know, Barack Obama is not known as being a particularly humorous guy. And he had some very good one-liners in the speech. I think he obviously thinks he's running against Mike Huckabee, you know, sometime in 2012. But his statements about gays in the military, his statements about we're not going to be subsidizing these oil companies. I mean, he made some surprisingly bold statements when he didn't have to. And I think that sort of makes this State of the Union stand out against some of the others of the last 4 or 5 years.
Tell me why you think it's obvious that he's running against Huckabee.
Well, because Huckabee is the only Republican out there right now who has any degree of media charm. He's folksy. He's kind-hearted. He plays guitar. He has sort of a self-deprecating sense of humor. And that would be a difficult challenge for sort of the occasionally stiff Obama to go up against. So I think introducing this sort of humor and lighthearted behavior to a State of the Union, I think that was a shot across the bow to the Huckabee camp.
And Trevor, you have actually noted that while President Obama has a pretty well-deserved reputation for giving well-received and soaring speeches at times, that his State of the Unions have not been that special. What about last night?
Well, he's really only given one State of the Union thus far, so it's kind of a small number to compare him to. I thought last night he made some interesting inroads with regards to the whole genre of State of the Union speeches. For instance, he noted this sort of standard line about the State of the Union being strong and save that till the end, when usually that comes at the beginning.
Right.
Rather than highlighting and having somebody stand up who was sitting next to Mrs. Obama, he instead sprinkled throughout the speech various narratives of different Americans dealing with re-education, as in the woman who's pursuing a biotech degree, or the families from the Tucson shooting and the like. And so I thought he took some liberties, if you will, with the standard expectations that most people have vis-a-vis State of the Union addresses. And I think to that extent, he was fairly successful. It felt different. It was received differently. And I think that works to his benefit
now,
politically and in terms of policy.
You've raised something interesting here, and I didn't know this until I read the notes of what you'd been saying about this. You call them Lenny Skutnik moments. Is that right? Why?
Because historically, those moments in States of the Union began when Ronald Reagan introduced a man named Lenny Skutnik, who was an individual who jumped off of a bridge spanning the Potomac after a Delta airliner had crashed a few months prior, weeks prior to the State of the Union. I don't remember the exact year, but it was one of Ronald Reagan's first States of the Union. And so those of us who study this stuff always call those moments the Lenny Skutnik moments, when the president turns and introduces somebody sitting next to the first lady.
You know, I was ready for those. And I thought it was, as you say, I thought it was interesting that he sprinkled them out throughout the speech. Usually there's a section where the audience get pointed to these special people in the audience and then they've moved on. But he put them in different places through the speech. And one of the people was this young company owner out of, I think he said, Berlin, Pennsylvania, who developed this drilling equipment that was used to unearth the miners in Chile. Let's listen to what the president said about him.
But Brandon thought his company could help, and so he designed a rescue that would come to be known as Plan B. His employees worked around the clock to manufacture the necessary drilling equipment, and Brandon left for Chile. Along with others, he began drilling a 2,000-foot hole into the ground, working three or four days at a time without any sleep. 37 days later, Plan B succeeded, and the miners were rescued.
Trevor, I think that's interesting because he went on to say, Brandon was not even there when the miners were rescued. That's a sense of his great humility, that he didn't stand around to take all the plaudits after that.
I think that's right, and I think it did two things. On one level, it demonstrated the overall thematic of the speech, which is a sort of we can do it, we can think big, America is an exceptional, special place, let's rise to the occasion and solve the problems. The other thing it did is work, I think, well, rhetorically and politically for the president, who, in my judgment, has had a difficulty demonstrating his empathy with average Americans. And I think with each of the narratives that he utilized to demonstrate sort of policy positions, and by having or knowing probably that the networks and the television coverage would cut to those individuals sitting in the box, I think what the president was able to do was demonstrate that he actually does understand and can, really empathize with the ways in which Americans live their lives in exceptional ways.
Jason, do you think that's true, that the president has, you know, kind of a reputation for being unable to empathize with average Americans, and we were seeing an attempt to turn that around last night?
I think it was a mixture of both. I think the lack of empathy might be on both sides. There's a lot of Americans who see this biracial man with a funny name, and they just can't connect with him, regardless of him being raised by a single mom and everything. You know, a guy who considers his hometown to be Hawaii is kind of foreign to a lot of people in America. So I think the empathy thing sort of works both ways, but I think sort of rhetorically and strategically, it was brilliant. What I noticed is every single anecdote that he mentioned was in a key state. He mentioned Colorado.
That's
he
right.
mentioned North Carolina. He mentioned, you know, Pennsylvania. And now he is in Paul Ryan's backyard in Wisconsin. So, you know, there was he was sending messages out the entire time. Hey, these are the states that I'm targeting. These are the people that I'm targeting. And I think that worked really well.
I just want to point to a moment. And were both of you watching it on TV?
Yep.
Okay. So that moment when he singled out the woman who had to go back, I think she worked in a factory and she was going back mm-hmm. to school. Did you see when the camera was on? She was like, that's me. That's me.
Yes.
It was a great moment. It really humanized the whole speech.
I agree. Yeah, it was very charming. And what worked well is that he didn't really call her out. In other
right.
words, there
right.
wasn't that. Stand up,
right.
everybody applaud.
Right.
It was subtler. It was more meaningful in that sense, I think.
Jason, what were you going to say?
Yeah, and it was very like Susan Boyle moment. I mean, everybody knows that
was.
Lady, you know, and she's 55 years old. And the idea of going from a regular sort of just furniture factory, which is a common business in North Carolina, to biotechnology. I mean, it was the kind of thing that every single person can understand. And I think his stories that he selected were not only reflective of the direction that he wants to take the country, but they're what people have to face. There's another 55-year-old out there who saw that and was like, well, you know what? Maybe I can take those classes. Maybe I can do something that different.
And yeah. let's remember, too, that he was also able, I think, beautifully to segue from not just her own personal story, but the meaning that it had for her children. And I think that made a big difference as well. It was very Clinton-esque in that way, because Bill Clinton used to do a similar sort of strategy when he would talk about the importance of employment and the importance of re-education and job training.
You know, we've got an online comment here that I think is interesting, and I thought about this as well. Anne in Minneapolis says, much made of Gabrielle Giffords' absence, and they had the empty seat in the Arizona delegation last night, much sympathy expressed, including by the president. But Anne says, not a word about gun regulation, background checks, and ban of assault weapons. You know, Trevor, that's got to be deliberate, I would think.
I assume it is, and I think that goes to what Professor Johnson is suggesting vis-a-vis the targeting of important and key states. Democrats who make a big deal out of guns generally don't do well in North Carolina. And so I think to some extent there was that strategy involved. But if beyond anything else, I think that is getting the most criticism from certainly folks on the more liberal left in America, the Brady Center for Handgun Prevention or whatever it's called, certainly came out very strongly. Paul Helmke issued a statement that was very condemnatory of that absence in the speech. And so I think from a liberal perspective, people see that as a great missed opportunity on the part of the president.
And Jason, I was kind of primed for it. I was really wondering what the language would sound like, and I was surprised when it didn't make it into the speech. And also, you know, he dealt with the Gabrielle Giffords thing at the very top of the speech, and if I'm remembering right, really didn't come back to it.
Yeah, he really didn't. And at first I was thinking, well, is this because, you know, he spoke at her memorial
right.
last week? But I think it's just sort of an example of occasional Democratic cowardice. I mean, look, if you can't talk about gun control after a member of Congress has been shot by somebody who was mentally ill and was able to get access to a gun, then you're just not going to talk about it. Because, you know, this isn't politicizing. It's common sense. I don't think there's a Republican or a Democrat out there who would disagree with the idea that mentally ill people shouldn't be able to buy guns. And he avoided what I think was, a point where he could have shown some moral and some policy courage. And I think he just missed it entirely.
And I've got to believe there were Democrats sitting in the room that thought he was going to talk about gun control, too, and were waiting for the language and were also disappointed, you think?
Oh, definitely, definitely. And I think, you know, some of the claims from the left, they're completely legitimate this time. I mean, there's just been absolutely nothing said, nothing proposed since that tragedy. And I know sometimes that politicians fear, well, I don't want to appear that I'm politicizing something. Well, you can. I mean, if a member of Congress is shot, you might want to talk about it. And he really didn't.
You're listening to Mid-Morning This Morning on the day after the State of the Union speech by President Obama. We've asked Jason Johnson and Trevor Perry Giles to be with us today. We're analyzing the content, also analyzing the language of the speech, and we've used kind of an interesting online tool to do this. We ran the speech through a tool called Wordle, which analyzes the words and then creates this, like, drawing to show us which words were emphasized in the speech. You can see it on the mid-morning website, on the mid-morning page, look on the main page and then scroll down a little bit and you'll see some links that say Wordle 2011 State of the Union and compared with the State of the Union speeches from 2010. If you're listening in this morning, you want to check that out, streaming us this morning, you can also give us your impressions, mprnews.org. I'm also asking you, if you listened or you watched last night, what you were waiting to hear that perhaps you didn't hear. You know, we've been talking about gun control, no language about that in the speech last night. Did the speech and the response by the GOP deliver what you were expecting, or were you waiting to hear something that you didn't hear? Weigh in, 800-242-2828. If you're in the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000. If you're online with us this morning, mprnews.org. I want to bring John Gordon into the discussion. He is our social media editor, and I know you've been checking out the blogs and YouTube and Twitter and Facebook and everything else. John, what are you seeing?
I could barely get past Twitter, frankly, because really? There was so much to digest there that I just sort of hung out last night during the speech on Twitter. And for the attempt to digest everything that was going on and everything that was being said, I believe I deserve some sort of form of combat pay.
All right. You got it.
I sat on my easy chair and had my iPad in my lap and just watched what folks were saying about the speech during this State of the Union. And what's interesting was I could barely pay attention to the actual speech and kept having to ask a friend what was actually said compared to what I saw on Twitter. The first thing is there was a lot of sort of official stuff going around. Barack Obama was tweeting his own speech, right? Which a lot of people made jokes about. Ooh, he can tweet and deliver a State of the Union. Other people were sort of disappointed that it obviously wasn't him doing the actual tweeting. But it was interesting that key phrases from his speech, if you were just following that one account, Barack Obama on Twitter, you got the essence of the speech. The White House was live streaming it on their website, a video live stream along with annotation, graphics, and
things
like
that. And John, that's new, isn't it? Where, I mean, it almost looks like what you'd see on one of the cable channels where they're putting up information around the frame of the picture.
Right.
Yes?
That was innovative, and lots of folks on Twitter really seemed to like that. It was a sort of cements the Obama administration's reputation as someone who is sort of on the cutting edge digitally.
Right.
Folks also really like, by the way, that he mentioned Facebook and Google
right.
in the speech. You know, after the speech, Press Secretary Gibbs was answering questions on Twitter, and, you know, folks seemed to like that. News organizations were live tweeting it. NPR, National Public Radio, did its own word cloud, like Mid-Morning has done, but theirs was based on people's three-word impressions of the speech, and the two biggest words I saw, inspiration and salmon.
Salmon. Really? That was the fresh saltwater and smoked
right.
salmon joke that he made there?
I don't get that joke, but maybe we could talk afterwards and you could explain that to me.
So, John, I just want to mention while you're talking about Wordle, what our word cloud ends up looking like here for President Obama's side of this is new people, years. That ends up coming out of the center of the cloud and then some interesting words around it. But I think new is kind of, I mean, he's almost as if he's restarting again. And that's what he's doing, right, to launch for 2012.
Right. And that's a really interesting way to analyze a speech. It's a very different take on it. And, you know, in addition to all of the sort of the official Twitter stuff, there was this great sort of back channel conversation going on among the American people. And what I saw there in some ways sort of made me afraid for the future of our democracy in many ways, because it was this sort of giant sort of snark fest of people not doing the kind of deep analysis you're hearing on Mid-Morning today. But it was people talking about John Boehner's tan, for example.
What do you expect? I mean, it's 140 characters. I mean, it just lends itself to snark.
It paid off in snark. There was, as far as I could tell, many thousands of tweets per minute using the State of the Union hashtag or the classification system. So it was impossible to follow it all. seemingly the most retweeted person of the night was Keith Olbermann.
No kidding.
Sort of doing a Conan O'Brien act, right, where O'Brien was off the air and then he really reinvented himself on Twitter.
Yeah.
That's what I saw. Everyone was retweeting Keith Olbermann.
And what was Olbermann saying that was so insightful?
Snark, of course. You know, I mean, it was mostly barbs. I didn't see a lot of really super thoughtful analysis. But like I said, these things were flying by me so fast. There's no way I really had time to do deep analysis.
Trevor, I'm interested in what you're hearing here from John and what you make of it.
It seems to me, first of all, that to expect deep analysis in 140 characters is probably
yeah,
asking a lot.
Exactly.
But secondly, I guess I am less bothered by the nature and future of our democracy because people are fixated on whether or not Boehner would cry when the president singled him out or his tan or whatever, because I think that speaks to the ways in which most people probably interact with this annual ritual. It asks a lot from people to sit for an hour and listen to this sort of lengthy recitation of policy proposals and pretty sophisticated politics.
Yeah, right.
And so I think the fact that even people are tweeting at all and are listening at all is probably good.
Well, in fact, I saw multiple tweets along the lines of, I can't believe I never had this live feed on Twitter before. This makes it so much more fun. Or
right,
how did
right.
I ever watch State of the Union before?
Right.
Right. So, I mean, that makes me at least a little more hopeful for the democracy, because I think at least they're engaging, and I see that as a good thing.
I have to say, I really love that idea that the feed coming out of the White House has, yes, it's their annotation, but finally get up to, where cable news has been for the last 8 years, and it's interesting to see how they're annotating, from their point of view, Jason, the
right,
spin that they're putting on it.
Oh, well, I think they did a good job of sort of getting his highlights. I mean, Obama, he had some great lines. We do big things.
Right.
And, if you want to be a teacher, America needs you. And who you love doesn't affect you, serving in the military. I mean, he had some great one-liners, some great, very memorable lines. And personally, and I agree, with the other guests, it's not just that it's good that people are paying attention, but even when I see a tweet of a bunch of college students saying we're doing a drinking game to the State of the Union, it means they're paying attention.
There was a lot of those, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
I know. I looked at that ahead of time. It was hilarious. So every time he'd use a certain phrase, then you would either pound it or sip, right?
Exactly. And they were all over 21, of course.
Of course.
But the idea that Obama can make something that is fairly routine, an actual event, I think speaks well for the health of our democracy. Whether people liked it or hated it, people were paying attention. I think that's good for the country.
All right, let me take some calls here. John, stand by with me. To the phones to Randy in Minneapolis. Hey, Randy.
Good morning, Carrie.
Good morning.
I just felt compelled to call when I heard people saying that Obama should have focused on gun control. Now, I'm a progressive Minneapolis resident who generally favors more gun control, but I'm also smart enough to watch politics over the many years and know that it's a losing issue for Democrats. It is not something Obama needs to be focusing on right now. In the way that if he went from the healthcare sort of debacle and anger and said anything about gun control, he would just fire up the right. And I think he needs to avoid doing that, and that's exactly what he did. And so for everyone on the show, who I listen every day, and it's a great show, I'm a little surprised that people wouldn't have picked up on that point.
So, Jason, I think Randy has a good point here, but you were saying, yes, assess the political landscape and then stand above it and be willing to talk about this, even though it might be politically dangerous.
Exactly. I mean, this is an instance where you can legitimately make that argument. I mean, one of the things that's going to be interesting about, what happened in Tucson and what Obama didn't say is, we're all fortunate that Representative Gifford, she didn't die, and she is going to be back in Congress. So America is actually going to be recovering and rehabilitating with her.
Mm-hmm.
And what greater way could we demonstrate that we respect the dangers that some of these members of Congress are placed in by simply doing their jobs than to say, we're going to try to keep guns out of the hands of people who aren't responsible, hunters. But, it's a challenge.
But, Jason, I was thinking about that. Now, the makeup of the district that she comes from. I've wondered if when she's back in Congress, what those proposals, if there are any on guns, are really going to look like.
I think they'll be probably similar to what Obama said. Very simple, very quiet, and the sort of thing that are slid in as riders on larger pieces of legislation. Because, yes, it's not a winning issue if you're talking about Colorado, and it's not a winning issue if you're talking about North Carolina. And I think if the president does anything about gun control later on this year, it will be a good and a moral move. I think to not say anything during the State of the Union was a mistake, but as long as he does something policy-wise, he will have made up for that mistake.
I'm hearing from Gary in Minneapolis online, who says Chris Matthews says that the gun speech is coming in 2 weeks, that the president didn't want to mix guns in with the economy. Let me grab a quick call here before we go to news to Bob in St. Paul. Hey, Bob, thanks for waiting.
Hey, thanks. Did we go to full unemployment on Monday or Tuesday and I missed it? Because there certainly wasn't anything about it in the speech. I'm guessing Wordle was pretty low in terms
yes.
of the count on that.
I'm really glad you brought that up. We did not. I'm looking at the word cloud here. Boy, I don't see. Yeah, we see jobs. Yeah, jobs kind of at the bottom, somewhat emphasized. I don't see employment or unemployment. I don't think he mentioned the unemployment rate, did he?
No, he never mentioned unemployment. He didn't use that actual word. He didn't use the word middle class. I mean, it was just a huge gaping hole in the speech. And I think one of the other weaknesses to what he was talking about is it was great to talk about these individual companies, and it was great to talk about these individual efforts. But when you don't talk about unemployment and
right.
it's at 9.4%, that's a mistake.
Yeah, Trevor, what did you make of that?
Well, I think he did talk about unemployment. He just didn't use the word. And I think if you look at the words that were emphasized in his speech, they were uniformly positive, optimistic, and forward-looking. And unemployment is a negative term. You can go to the word cloud for Michelle Bachmann's speech
exactly.
and discover that unemployment is the biggest word that she used, or the most frequent word that she used.
That's right. And she also used percent, so she
right.
was clearly talking about the percentage of unemployment there.
And Paul Ryan's word cloud on your website also indicates that the words that he used most frequently were spending and debt. And those are all very negative, very backward-looking, very pessimistic terminologies to employ in a State of the Union sort of context. And so I think certainly the president talked about unemployment throughout the speech but didn't use the term. And I think to that extent he accomplished his task pretty well on a rhetorical basis.
Trevor Perry Giles is one of our guests this morning from the University of Maryland. Jason Johnson is with us from Hiram College. John Gordon is sitting in the studio with me today as we talk about the reaction to the State of the Union, what was said on television, on the radio, on social media. John had some really interesting assessments here of what was being said in the heat of the moment during the speech. So we're talking about that. I'm asking you, as you listened in, maybe you tweeted during the speech, maybe you were on Facebook, maybe you watched it on YouTube, maybe you watched the response on YouTube. I'd like to know what your impressions were. Were there things that you expected the president to talk about that he didn't? How about high moments of the speech for you? 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000, online with us at nprnews.org. And hey, check out our Wordle word clouds. Very interesting. Go to the NPR page, look for the Wordle link, and then call in or email us and let us know what you think. Back in just a minute.
Today's question is supported by Allianz Life Insurance Company of North America, helping more than 1 million Americans get closer to their retirement goals. Allianz, for all that's ahead. Online at allianzlife.com.
Rock the Cradle is coming. Save the date of February 20th for our annual free gathering of kids and their parents. A day of music, stories, and fun at the Minneapolis Institute of Arts and Children's Theater Company from 89.3 The Current and Minnesota Public Radio.
From Minnesota Public Radio News, I'm Matt Sepik. Egyptian anti-government activists tried to stage a second day of protests around Cairo today in defiance of an official ban, but police used tear gas and beatings to disperse the demonstrators. A day after tens of thousands turned out in several cities for the biggest protest in years, activists used online social networking to call for fresh demonstrations. The upper house of Russia's parliament has ratified the New START nuclear arms pact with the United States. It limits each country to 1,000 2,550 strategic warheads, down from the current ceiling of 2,200. It also reestablishes a system for monitoring. President Obama is taking his economic message on the road today, the day after his State of the Union address. Today he'll visit three factories in Wisconsin to talk about investing in innovation and infrastructure. There was a variety of reaction to the speech from Minnesota's delegation in Washington. President Obama's call for a five-year spending freeze on some domestic programs drew skeptical comments from DFL Senator Al Franken and Congressman Keith Ellison. But freshman Republican Congressman Chip Kravac says for the most part, he liked what he heard.
I agree with what the president said and a lot of things. I agree with 80% of what he said. But the problem is I haven't agreed with about 80% of what he's done. Now, he had a great speech at the last State of the Union as well, but we said he didn't follow through. If he followed through a lot of these projects, I can be with him.
The strongest criticism came from Republican Michelle Bachmann, who said the country has seen an unprecedented explosion of spending and debt under President Obama. Jurors have convicted a northern Minnesota woman of murder for the 2009 shooting death of her partner. 26-year-old Betsy Marie Hanks was sentenced to life in prison without possibility of release. She was convicted of killing 27-year-old Matthew Albert, the father of her four sons. Mostly cloudy skies across the state today. Scattered flurries possible as well. Highs in the lower to mid-20s. This is Minnesota Public Radio News.
We're back on mid-morning on Minnesota Public Radio News, and I'm Carrie Miller. Listen in at 10 for a first-of-its-kind NPR and BBC real-time collaboration on Somalia. We will have Somalian guests here in our forum, in our UBS forum, and the BBC is hosting a conversation with Somalian residents in London. And so we are doing this collaboration real time. You can listen in for it at 10 o'clock. Then I'll be back in the UBS Forum tonight for a conversation about social learning. If you did not get a seat, and I have to say, we filled up so quickly. If you come, we're going to try to cram you in because I want to find seats for everybody. But if you can't make it, you can hear the conversation on Monday, January 31st. That's this coming Monday at 9 o'clock. I know there's been so much interest in this. So if you can't make it, do listen in on Monday at 9, our UBS Forum discussion on social learning. This hour, we are talking about reaction to President Obama's State of the Union speech, and we're also going to talk now about the response by Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan. 800-242-2828 to join us to give us your impressions. 651-227-6000. Online this morning, nprnews.org. Jason and Trevor, I want to play an excerpt from something that Congressman Ryan said last night, and then we can talk about it. Let's listen.
We owe you a better choice and a different vision. Our forthcoming budget is our obligation to you to show you how we would do things differently, how we will cut spending to get the debt down, help create jobs and prosperity, and reform government programs.
What do you think about that phrase, Jason, we owe you a better choice and a different vision?
I thought it was really interesting, and it seemed to be sort of from the theme that Obama laid out in Tucson, that, you know, we owe it to the young people who died in this tragedy to be the kind of Congress that they expect of us. And I thought that was nice. In fact, I think that what Ryan said was really substantive, and he was the rare Republican who said, look, these problems didn't start with Obama, but they have to end now.
Mm-hmm.
He made it very clear that, you know, some of these budget problems and the irresponsible government spending, you know, he said it took several presidents to get here. So I actually thought that his speech was very good. It wasn't great on style, but substantively, I think he really laid out a realistic agenda for the Republican Party.
Trevor, I, along the lines of what didn't get said, I did not hear any mention of Medicare and Social Security specifically, and I was surprised because that's something that Paul Ryan is quite well versed on and has been giving a message to his colleagues that they don't necessarily want to hear.
Well, and to his credit, the president did make mention of the need to at least address and continue the work begun by the bipartisan commission that he appointed on deficit spending and deficit issues.
Right.
So you're right. I think that was quite strategic and points to the major problem that, despite all of their substance, the Republicans have, which is, what are you going to specifically cut?
Mm-hmm.
Be specific. I mean, the president at least talked about things that most Democrats would never have talked about in the past. consolidation of federal departments, for instance. The salmon joke was a nice way of discussing exactly how greater efficiencies in government can be achieved through, more attentiveness to efficiency issues. So I think, you know, to that extent, the Ryan response and the Bachman response spoke to exactly the problem that both the Republicans had going into the speech and that was exemplified and amplified by the president's approach to the State of the Union. What are you going to do?
Let me take a call here. I want to come back and talk about the Bachman response and some of the reaction to that to Chris in Mountain Lake. Hey, Chris.
Hello. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Great subject. I just have a kind of a comment. There's argument that Bill Clinton was the best Republican president we ever had, and he was a Democrat. It sounds like Mr. Obama's speech was right along the lines of what the Republicans and even the Tea Party have been saying. They want a leaner, smaller government. They want more effective governance. And if we're going to spend money, spend it where it's going to do the most good. That's what I walked away with. It sounded like Mr. Ryan's response was the same old, cut taxes, cut taxes, cut everything. And my question, I guess, is do we have a hope that the Republicans might take what Obama has said and be able to run with it a little bit and work with them instead of being the party of we must win at all costs?
Jason, in a word, no? Or what would you say?
No, no. I mean, they're not going to do that at all. I mean, they're caught between a rock and a hard place now. We've seen since Christmas time, it appears as though the economy might be getting better. And if the economy gets better, they really have no chance. Their only chance of beating Obama next year is if the economy stays bad and they're obstructionists. So, no, they don't want to work with him. That ruins their chances of winning in 2012.
Let me bring John Gordon back in here. So, John, then you immediately, I assumed, switched over to the Twitter feeds of Congressman Ryan's speech and then Michelle Bachman. So what were you saying?
Well, I was monitoring, you know, not their own accounts, but what folks were saying about them. And what I noticed is that the volume of tweets didn't seem to slow down after Obama's speech. It continued into Representative Ryan's presentation and Michelle Bachman's as well. Again, I didn't see a lot of deep analysis. That's difficult to do on Twitter, of course. I noticed a lot of comparisons to Ronald Reagan in Ryan's speech, sort of both favorable and not favorable.
Oh, really?
Boy, he's just like Reagan, or the guy looks like Reagan, or it was, you know, people talk. Yeah, well, exactly. People talked about the hair and the sort of strange pinkish hue to his eyes, which a lot of people made some really inappropriate jokes about.
Whoa. All right.
Yeah, no, exactly. And then into Bachman's presentation, Twitter stayed right on it. Many people were expressing their great anticipation before her presentation, what it was going to be like, both positive and negative, of course. Michelle Bachman became what they call a trending topic on Twitter own right.
Oh.
Interestingly, both her first and last names were misspelled as the trending topic. So almost everyone misspelled both of her names. The most common comment about Bachman's presentation was from those who were watching it on CNN. When she apparently had two cameras in the room.
That's right, right.
She was looking at the website camera and not at the CNN camera. And you know, people didn't understand probably what was going on, but they thought it just bizarre the way it came on.
Trevor, I want to ask you what you thought of that. The NPR reporter made note of it. I thought it was odd, too, but tell me your take.
Well, I suspect the most common Twitter feed in response was, what is she looking at? Or who is she looking at? You know, it speaks to, I think, a real problem that sometimes these responses to the State of the Union have, which is that by comparison, they're always going to have less gravitas, less seriousness, because the occasion is so dramatically different. I mean, it's very ritualized, the way the president walks into the chamber and Mr. Speaker and the whole applause and the ceremony of the event. And these responses always occur in relatively sanitized, weird places like, you know, anterooms and state house chambers and things along those lines that never quite get that same gravity. And I think Bachman's issues with the camera speaks exactly to the problem. You know, you're not dealing with that great ceremony that the president gets, and so every little problem is magnified. Every little issue, be it your hair or your pink eye or we're looking in the wrong camera, becomes the focal point rather than what you're trying to communicate.
We have an online question here from somebody who's been checking out the Wordle and asking, why is the Bachman Wordle so small when the other two, Obama and Ryan, are larger and legible? It looks like because her president and government are not in the center of her word cloud, and we're not sure why, but that seemed to shrink the cloud a little bit. We'll get back to you with more info on that when we know why. Go ahead, John.
Could also be that maybe the speech was the shortest presentation, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Right.
Fewer
right.
words to
Much
digest.
Much more animated, though, than Paul Ryan's, mm-hmm.
And in fact, some people I read on Twitter like that, but many people, a remarkable amount really, said this is just like an infomercial for Ronco or a PBS fundraising pitch. And this was just a lot of people said that. This is not my own opinion, but people definitely noticed how animated it was, for sure.
Back to the phones here to Dave in Oak Grove. Hey, Dave, you're on Mid Morning.
Hi. Thank you. I think it was Trevor that mentioned that an hour is a long time for the American people to listen to a speech. And I just find that a sad commentary. I know people that go to church Sunday after Sunday and they listen to an hour sermon and they pay attention. I guess what I want to ask your guests, don't you think it's a very sad commentary that in general, the public does not seem to be able to listen carefully and thoughtfully and interactively with a speech that is only an hour?
Trevor?
No, I don't. And I think historically it's been the nature of our political discourse and our political interactions that there's been a shrinkage in the amount of attention that people can devote to this sort of discourse. I don't know what church you're going to, but most of the ones I attend, that's a long sermon for an hour, as opposed to the entire service. And I think that is generally the case with regards to most kinds of public discourse. You ask a great deal of people when you say, sit quietly and listen carefully for an hour to pretty complicated stuff. And I was simply suggesting that it's not surprising to me then that people are fixated in that time span on, John Boehner's complexion.
Jason, do you have a thought on that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a problem that people don't want to listen, but I think it's that double-edged sword that Obama deals with. It seems like so long ago, but, 8-9 months ago, people were criticizing him for giving too many speeches, for
right.
spending too much time explaining what he was actually doing, which is what he was elected to do. So, he gets criticism if he's on the air too much explaining how he was doing his job. He gets criticism if he's not on the air enough. I mean, I think the speech was just about right. And if you look at it historically, I mean, at one point, presidents didn't even deliver the speech. They just handed the speech to Congress. So, I think he's sort of fitting in with a normal trend, and it's not a negative indicator on American attention at all.
Go ahead, John.
And, it was difficult before this whole new media thing came along. And now think about what Pauls have to negotiate. Twitter, Facebook, live streams. I mean, it's gotten incredibly complicated.
Right.
And it seems like in this case, both, the political parties and the president did some really interesting and innovative stuff, and I think negotiated the new media landscape pretty well.
I have to say, I really appreciated the lack of that hyper excessive cheering. That seemed to be tamped down a little bit last night, Jason. Perhaps it was because, Democrats and Republicans were sitting together. But that, as a viewer, that is so boring, and it's so, just playing to the cameras, really. We know a lot of it isn't sincere. It's just because people are watching.
When I watched the sort of much more muted reactions, it reminded me of sort of like going to a rock concert with your mom. And, you know, there's certain lyrics you're just not going to clap at because you're sitting next to your mom. And, you know, and I think that's how it was. I think Democrats
like what,
and Republicans.
By the way.
Well, yeah, just like certain what? Concerts I can think of. But, you know, there's, you know, Democrats and Republicans had to look at each other and say, well, all right, I'm not going to go too far on this. I'm not going to go too far on that. And I agree. I think as a viewer, it was fantastic. We didn't have to stop every 7 minutes when he said a buzzword. I think that was an improvement in the speech.
We've got John online in Roseville saying President Obama repeatedly emphasized winning the future. How is his rhetoric being shaped by a view of the future that's different from the GOP and Congressman Paul Ryan? Trevor, that struck me, too. And I know there was a lot of analysis about this last night, that the speech was very thematic, which was refreshing because often it's you get to the middle of that speech and it's just one long list of things that the president is going to try to do. This felt like it held together better than a lot of State of the Union speeches. For
and
you?
I think it played to the president's strengths. I remember last year when he gave the State of the Union, listening to the laundry list that was more present in the 2010 speech, and he always sounded bored when he gets to that section of the speech. That's not his strong suit rhetorically. Bill Clinton could always make it sound like he cared about each and every one of those items on the laundry list, and he was able to communicate that enthusiasm. But President Obama doesn't do that as well, and I think he recognized and his speechwriters recognized that his real strength comes from the inspirational, the high-flying rhetoric. And to that extent, I think this speech was crafted in a way that really played to that strength in some compelling ways.
Let me grab a call here from Cameron in Minneapolis. Hey, Cameron, thanks for waiting.
Yes, ma'am. I thought the overall speech was pretty boring, but it was. I like the president's optimism.
Mm-hmm.
He seemed really, positive. I like his ideas. He just seemed really hopeful, and that kind of rubbed off. But I found the speech, overall pretty boring and long, and I think you guys already touched on that. But I liked the part when he talked about taking the tax breaks away from the oil company.
That gets a big thumbs up from you, huh?
Oh, yeah. I think that's definitely, with profits like they have, I think that it's, that's the last thing they need is more profits. So and then the part that I didn't really care for was the gays in the military. I don't think that they... I just don't think that they belong there. I look at it from a morality standpoint.
So you mean from a policy standpoint, you disagree with the idea?
Right.
Okay.
Right. And his military leaders the problem there. They didn't really care. I mean, they didn't stand and applaud and everything. They didn't seem to really like it either.
Cameron, I'm afraid we're losing you, but I think we've got your central thought. Jason, you want to react to what Cameron was saying?
Yeah, it was that typical way that Obama leaves everybody angry and everybody wanting more. He says, look, now gays can serve in the military, so all of you liberal college campuses better let ROTC onto campus.
Yeah.
And I thought that was just, I was like, it was brilliant triangulation. You know, it was very sort of Bill Clinton. And, you know, an example of what Obama has done to the frustration of many on the right and the left, but to the joy of the people who run his campaigns.
Well, and can I just say, too, Kerry, I think... it's probably useful to remember, too, that the military is not supposed to react, as the Supreme Court is similarly not supposed to react to these speeches. They go because they're part of the ritual, and they attend because that's an expectation. But you'll notice that when all the clapping and standing up and sitting down happens, usually the members of the military that are present and the members of the Supreme Court don't engage in those behaviors.
Yeah, that's what made last year so interesting when the president commented on the Supreme Court decision and we got a reaction from the usual stone-faced Supreme Court members.
Right, and that Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito did not attend last night.
Oh, is that right? I wasn't aware of that.
The three more conservative members of the court, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, were not in attendance.
Roberts was there, though, right? Because apparently he was quite angry after last year's remarks.
He decided to come, if I read the reports correctly, because of the shooting in Arizona.
I see. Online here from Ashley in St. Paul, she says, I thought it was a great moment when Obama mentioned Biden and Boehner's rise from humble beginnings. Also, I thought Boehner was going to cry. As he does so often. John, was Boehner's office tweeting last night or sending out anything?
I didn't see anything, but I was watching this river of tweets, and it's sort of like looking for a drop in a river. So I believe I saw reference to the fact that his office was doing something unique, but I didn't see any tweets from the office.
Okay. I read a report in Politico this morning that indicates that they were, in fact, tweeting about every sentence or two of the speech with a rebuttal.
Right. Is that? Wow. That takes some pretty nimble fingers and some fast fact-checking, doesn't it, if that's what you want to call it?
Presumably they have an advanced copy of the speech, so they or at least have some sense of what's going to be in it, and so they were prepared.
So Steve wants to know, in St. Louis Park, do you both think that this is going to help Obama's approval ratings? We should say that they're up. I think the CBS poll has them at 55%, Jason. Will they potentially go higher?
I mean, they were already going up. But Republicans like to say it's because of the speech in Tucson. No, they were going up because of the economy. We had the best Christmas sales in the last several years. Indicators are the stock market just hit a new high. The Super Bowl, for the first time, the prices for Super Bowl commercials have actually gone up for the first time in 3 years.
Oh, that's so good to know.
Exactly. You know, so by all indicators, you know, when you see money getting spent at those high levels, it usually means that hiring is going to come soon afterwards. So that's what's going to help Barack Obama. People are going to forget about this speech in a week. But if the economy continues to improve, he's in great shape for 2012. That's what he really wants.
Yeah, I think, Trevor, I think I was seeing analysis somewhere that said that if unemployment hits 8% and stays there, he's got a pretty good outlook there for 2012. If it stays up above 9%, that's trouble. It's interesting how one percentage point would make that big of a difference, isn't it?
Well, it is interesting. I think more interesting is the fact that all of these folks who are projecting onto 2012 forget that that's a long time in politics, and there's still a lot that can happen. And so I'm always reluctant to make too much of a moment like the State of the Union address and then project too far into the future. The Republicans still have to figure out who they're going to run against him. And I think it's also the case that presidents generally get some kind of uptick as a result of the speech. And it's less to do with the speech itself. I think Jason's right that people forget about it very quickly. But the speech becomes a sort of template for everything to come for the next few months. And if the speech gets that off to a good start, then the president can maybe navigate that to even higher approval ratings with the passage of legislation, with events like the one in Wisconsin today and the like. So I think it can be important in terms of his overall popularity in the next few months, certainly.
Jason and Trevor, this has really been great. I'm grateful that you could spend the hour with us today. Wonderful to hear your insights. Come back, please.
Thank you. Anytime.
Thanks a lot.
Jason Johnson is professor of political science and communications at Hiram College. He's also the political editor for The Source, with us from Atlanta, and Trevor Perry Giles, professor in the communications department at the University of Maryland, and he was with us from College Park. Let me go back to John just real quick here. Now, John, I assume that the conversation continues today, just as we're deconstructing the speech. People are tweeting and Facebooking and everything else about it, right?
Yeah, this is where it sort of moves from the instant analysis, the first draft of history on Twitter, and probably goes onto people's Facebook accounts and blogs and things like that. It'll stay a topic for a while, but it really was one of those events where it was like a lot of conversation at once, and then it'll really slow down.
So you come back too, all right?
All right.
Good to have you here. John Gordon with us. He's our social media editor. And just a note here, we were talking about John Boehner's Twitter feed. Boehner's Twitter and Facebook sites do not have any tweets during the speech. Maybe a secondary site tweeting, but not the official Twitter site. All right, coming up at 10 o'clock, a very interesting collaboration here between Minnesota Public Radio and the BBC on Somalia. We have a live audience here. The BBC will have an audience there. And this is kind of a first of its kind. So you should listen into to this. This is at 10 o'clock this hour. And this is mid-morning on Minnesota Public Radio News. Stay tuned for the BBC event coming up.
Each weekday, Minnesota Public Radio News invites you to join the conversation on mprnews.org. Last night, President Obama delivered his State of the Union address, his second such address since becoming president. Today's question, what did you think of the president's speech? Go to mprnews.org to leave your answer and see the answers of others, or send a text to 677-677. We'll share some of your answers this afternoon on All Things Considered.